call a meeting to order, and the clerk will note the members present. We don't quite have a quorum present yet. I think there's 13 or 14 people here, and we need 21 for a quorum. So what we'll do is hold off on the approval of the minutes until we have a quorum present. But in the interest of time, would like to get started on the legislative audit report dealing with state grants to nonprofit organizations. And I did have the advantage of hearing an overview of this the other day, and I thought it would be important for the Finance Committee to hear it as well. I happened to, along with others, serve on the commission that deals with the oversight of the legislative audit office. And because some of the issues that are raised in the report certainly cross jurisdictional lines in terms of the various grants and so on that are given to private nonprofits, with virtually all the divisions of the Finance Committee represented here, thought it would be a good place for that overview. And when we get to some of the recommendations, then there will be other conversations later as to how we may do the follow-up on that. So if you both would come forward, and let's see, I do have three names here for you, but, oh, Marcia will go second. Okay, so it'll be Mr. Nobles and then Marcia and, oh, Judy, okay, Judy Randall, okay, very good, and Mr. Nobles?
Mr. Chairman and members of the Finance Committee, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor. We appreciate this opportunity to be with you this morning to talk to you about our report on state grants to nonprofit organizations. As everyone in this room certainly knows, state government is a large and complicated financial enterprise. And if this year is anything like previous years, this committee will see legislation that will appropriate billions of dollars. Well over $4 billion of what you will appropriate will be spent to provide services to citizens of the state of Minnesota from various private nonprofit organizations. A lot of those organizations are large institutional healthcare organizations, and those payments will be made through the state's fairly tightly controlled, somewhat complex payment systems. But about $300 million will be set aside for individual grants to individual nonprofit organizations, again, to provide services to citizens of the state of Minnesota or their communities. We have, for a long time, at the Office of the Legislative Auditor, had some concerns about the grant-making process. We do not normally, on a regular basis, audit grants to nonprofit organizations, but on an ad hoc basis, in response to allegations, we have on occasion investigated grants to nonprofit organizations, and frankly, when we have found fairly significant problems. But we know we're not going to investigate our way to good government. We've got to start at the source. We've got to start at state government and have good government process, good business process in awarding and managing those grants. And that's what this report is about today. We asked the Legislative Audit Commission to authorize a broad-scoped evaluation of the way State of Minnesota awards its grants to nonprofits, and Judy Randall was the manager of that evaluation. She's going to tell you what we found and what we recommend. Again, we wanted to establish best practices and then evaluate and determine how well state agencies are complying with them. There are a number of things we would expect, and I think you would expect as well. But I think the most essential elements of good grant making would be competition, a written contract, and verification. But for more detail about what we found and what we recommend, I want to turn to Ms. Randall for a short presentation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Randall?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Judy Randall, and I'm with the Legislative Auditor's Office. I'm pleased to be here today to talk about our findings and recommendations from our evaluation on state grants to nonprofit organizations. Our overall conclusion is that state grants should be more consistently and effectively managed. Specifically, we found that agency grant policies and practices were inconsistent and inadequate. We found limited executive branch grant policies that apply to all state agencies, and those that do exist are not enforced. And we found especially weak oversight of legislatively mandated grants. Now, let me take just a step back and say, why are we focusing on grants to nonprofit organizations? Well, first of all, there are a lot of them in the state. We estimated that there are over 31,000 nonprofit organizations in Minnesota, and they receive a lot of money. In 2005, state agencies, this is across all agencies, spent about $300 million on grants to nonprofit organizations. And as Mr. Nobles mentioned, in the past couple of years, our office has conducted some investigations of grants to nonprofit organizations and found some problems, including inappropriate use of state funds and inadequate oversight by some state agencies. Now, let me spend just a moment talking about what I mean by the term grant. When the state makes purchases for its own use, it does so through professional technical contracts, service contracts, and purchase orders. So state agency staff use these tools to purchase things like architectural designs and software packages, or snow plowing services, or ballpoint pens and notepads. When the state makes purchases for other people, for citizens and communities, it does so through grants. So the critical distinction of a grant is that the state is not actually getting anything with a grant. It is paying for somebody else, for a citizen or a community to get something.
Could I just interrupt? We now have a quorum present, so I'll officially convene the committee meeting, and we'll deal with the minutes and so on in a few moments, but please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When we set out to conduct this evaluation, we developed some evaluation criteria, which in our report we call grant management best practices. We developed these best practices from a variety of sources, including the Department of Administration's contract manual, the national literature, our previous reports on grants management, and grant management practices from some local foundations, including the McKnight Foundation and the Bush Foundation. On page 23 in the report, in table 3.1, we set forth a whole list of best practices. I'm going to just focus on four of them here today. The first is regarding the award process, and best practices suggest that awards should be granted, or grants should be awarded through a competitive and open and fair process. There also should be a written grant contract for all grants awarded. Grant management best practices suggest that there should be a formal site visit of all grantees at least once during the grant period. And finally, that grant managers should conduct a review of grantees' expenditures, at least a sample of grantees' expenditures, and make sure that they were appropriate. Now, when we applied these best practices to the grants that we reviewed, we found that agency grant practices were inconsistent and at times inadequate. We reviewed 50 grants from six different agencies, the Departments of Human Services, Public Safety, Education, Health, Natural Resources, and DEED, the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And we found that the grant management practices really varied across agencies, but also within agencies. So, for example, I spoke to one grant manager in one division of DHS who said that they always reviewed grantee expenditures and made sure they were appropriate. I spoke to another grant manager in another division of DHS who said that they had never reviewed grantee expenditures. So the practices were really inconsistent. But in addition to being inconsistent, at times they were inadequate. And I want to spend some more time on this point. Let me go back to that first best practice I mentioned, which is regarding the award process. So best practices suggest that grants should be awarded through an open and fair competitive process where grants are advertised broadly. Interested organizations can apply for the grant. A review committee reviews the applications and then selects the most qualified organization to provide the services. Well, only 19 of the 50 grants that we reviewed were awarded through such a process. The remaining grants were awarded either as continuation grants to existing grantees or as legislatively mandated grantees. Two of the grants that we reviewed were awarded as sole source grants. And a sole source is when there's really only one organization that's reasonably capable of providing the services. For one of the grants, we agreed it was a sole source. But for the other grant, it was awarded by the Department of Natural Resources to build a fish barrier in Lake Moriah. And there were other organizations that could have provided that service. We think that grant should have been awarded through a competitive process rather than as a sole source grant. The next best practice is regarding a contract. best practices say a contract should be written. I think that's a pretty basic assumption. In addition to outlining the services to be provided and outlining the payment terms, the contract should also include the state's standard contract clauses regarding such things as data privacy, liability, and ownership of equipment. Now, most of the grants that we reviewed did have a written contract that included these standard contract clauses. However, two of the grants that we reviewed, both in the Department of Education, did not have a written contract. For one of these grants, department staff wrote an award letter to the grantee saying the amount of the grant award, but there was no delineation of services, nor was there any of those standard contract clauses. For the other grant, there was a letter of assurance that outlined some of the services, but again, those standard contract clauses that provide some protection to the state were not in place. The next best practice is regarding site visits. Best practices suggest that grant managers should conduct a formal site visit of all grantees at least once during the grant period. The purpose of the site visit is to observe the grantee's activities and ensure that the services agreed upon under the grant are being provided. For 26 of the grants that we reviewed, so for over half of the grants that we reviewed, there was no formal site visit. This is in contrast to the grants that we reviewed where there was a formal site visit, where grant managers had extensive checklists and monitoring protocols that they used to ensure that the services being provided, the services agreed upon, were being provided. The last best practice I want to talk about today is regarding the grantee's expenditures. I think grant managers should review a sample of grantee's expenditures and compare the payment request with supporting financial documentation. So, for example, a grant manager submits a payment request for $1,000 for services related to the grant. Well, we think the grant manager should review a sample of those and compare it with the original invoices, timesheets, receipts, and other documentation that show exactly what those services were and make sure that they were relevant and appropriate for the state grant. Only 10 of the grants that we reviewed had that type of financial reconciliation occur. For the remaining grants, there was no formal verification and comparison to supporting documentation. Now, part of why we think the agency's grant practices were inconsistent and inadequate is because agency's grant policies are inconsistent and also inadequate. We reviewed the written grant policies from the 6 agencies included in our evaluation, and we found that the policies really varied quite widely. For example, the Department of Natural Resources does not have a written agency-wide grant policy. And different divisions within the agency might have written grant policies, but there's no comprehensive agency-wide grant policy. So that means, for example, that the Department of Natural Resources does not require its grants to be awarded through a competitive process. Now, the other grants that the other policies that we reviewed were pretty detailed, especially the Departments of Human Services, Education, and Public Safety. They had quite detailed grant policies, but even those policies we found to be inadequate. Most of them did not require grant managers to conduct site visits, nor did they require grant managers to conduct a financial reconciliation and verification of a sample of grantee expenditures. Now, contributing to the agency, the problems we found with the agency's grant policies and practices is that the executive branch grant policies, so grant policies that apply to all state agencies, are limited, and those that do exist are not enforced. The Department of Administration has a contract manual that provides guidelines to state agency staff on how they should interact with outside vendors. One chapter of the manual is devoted to grants and provides some grant guidelines. However, the executive branch, these policies are not enforced. While these guidelines are in place, there's nobody making sure that state agency staff are following these grant guidelines. Now, this is in pretty stark contrast to how the state handles professional technical contracts. Several of the chapters in the contract manual are devoted to PT contracts. And as you may know, Department of Administration staff must approve most PT contracts before they go into place. Now, as I mentioned way in the beginning of the presentation, the state spent about $300 million in 2005 on grants to nonprofit organizations. Well, the state spent about $350 million on all PT contracts during the same year. But the state has much tighter control and much more consistent oversight of PT contracts than it does of grants. Now, in addition to the general problems we found with grant oversight, we found that legislatively mandated grants received especially weak oversight. Now, a legislatively mandated grant is when a grantee is named specifically in law or described in such a way that really very few organizations qualify. For example, the law might say, grant $100,000 to LifeWorks Services Incorporated to provide XYZ services. Or the law might say, grant $100,000 to a council in Duluth to provide compulsive gambling services. Well, in fact, very few organizations would qualify under that criteria. In essence, these grantees are guaranteed the funds. There's no competition for the grants. They are awarded in law. And we found that there was weaker oversight and accountability of these grantees. Some of the agency staff with whom we spoke said they felt they didn't really have the authority to require these grantees to comply with their monitoring requirements because these grantees were guaranteed the funds no matter what. And in fact, in our review, we found that site managers were less likely to conduct site visits or require progress reports of legislatively mandated grantees. Now let me give you a quick recap of all the things I've talked about kind of quickly this morning. We found that agency grant practices and policies are inconsistent and inadequate. There are limited executive branch grant policies, and those that do exist are not enforced. And finally, there's especially weak oversight and accountability of legislatively mandated grantees. So our recommendations are really focused on improving accountability and efficiency for state grants. Our primary recommendation is that the state should establish a grants management office in the executive branch. This office would be responsible for developing best practices, creating a standard grant contract that all grant managers and agency staff would be expected to use. The office would be responsible for requiring grant managers to verify a sample of grantee expenditures and reconciling them with supporting documentation. And in general, the office would be responsible for ensuring compliance with the state's grant policies, both ensuring that grant managers and the agencies comply with the grant policies, and also ensuring that the grantees themselves are complying with the grant policies. Now, a couple of notes about this, this recommendation. Last year, the Grants Management Initiative and the Drive to Excellence proposed establishing a similar office, and I actually just spoke with Commissioner Badgerow this morning, who's here, and she said that such an office is also going to be included in the governor's plan or the governor's budget this week. The state is already pretty far along on this initiative, on these functions that we see the office doing. For example, we've already listed out a bunch of best practices that this office could use as a jumping-off point. The Department of Administration has a grant contract template that this office could use as its starting point for the standard grant contract. We don't see this office as a big office. We see it as a 2-3-person function. Really, grants are managed by the program staff with the program expertise in the agencies, but those staff don't necessarily have the grant management expertise, and that's where this office would come in. The other big recommendation that we have in this report is regarding legislatively mandated grants, and we recommend that the legislature eliminate legislatively mandated grants. As I mentioned earlier, one of the best practices is to award grants through a competitive process, and when grants are legislatively mandated, they're essentially guaranteed, and so there is no competition. Instead, we think that the legislature should allow agencies to award grants through a competitive process to ensure that the most qualified organization receives the grant and to ensure the most amount of accountability for those grantees. With that, I will end the formal part of the presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Okay, we'll go to questions in just a second. As you know, we were a little slow in getting a quorum here, and I mentioned earlier we do have a quorum, so we don't forget I'd like to entertain a motion to approve the minutes. I think looks like Representative Simon is studying them carefully. Would you like to move approval of the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will.
Okay, motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion carried. Minutes approved. Now questions for either Mr. Nobles or Ms. Randall. Okay, Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Mr. Nobles or for the other testifier, I have a question about, you know, I thought it was a very interesting report. I'm an old United Way person, so I'm familiar with grants and things. Would you ever consider, do you think it might ever be a considered good idea to take another organization to do this, such as United Way or something, some way that's experienced with grants, and have them do this for the state? And the reason I bring that up is it often seems we're making grants in a vacuum, and we don't look at what other kinds of funding places have, and if we're doing complementary grants, I mean, if we're really trying to solve problems, we should be doing grants that help do that instead of sort of a little bit here and there. Has that ever come up, and do you think that would fit in, or do you think it's better to create a new office?
Ms. Randall?
Mr. Chair, Representative Slawik, we didn't discuss that much. In reaction to that suggestion, I guess I would favor having the office in the state, because these are state grants which need to kind of be held to a higher standard. We met with lots of people in the nonprofit world, the Council of Nonprofits, the Council of Foundations, several foundations in town, and everybody seemed to agree that the government needs to kind of have it to a higher standard, have accountability for the funds that it's been awarded. And, state has a state standard contract, which I would expect to be used for grants as well. And then the program expertise really resides in all of these different agencies. And, there's such a range of services that are provided through grants that I think it might be difficult for one organization, such as United Way even, which is so large, to have the necessary expertise to know what the state wants to have provided through its grants.
Mr. Chair, might I amplify on that?
Mr.
Chairman and members, Representative Slavik, you're talking about $300 million and covering a wide range of services, from health services, human services, even environmental protection. So I would just amplify what Ms. Randall said, that although the United Way is certainly a very respected organization, there are some aspects of what you achieve through grant making that United Way simply doesn't cover. But I would also point out that some of the grants do actually work somewhat in the way you're suggesting. I am aware that some of the organizations that we looked at that received grants then made grants to other organizations. I think one in particular is an organization called the Minnesota Organization on Fetal Alcohol Syndrome. My recollection is that the state granted some millions of dollars to that organization, and then they made grants to other organizations working in that area. So I think to some degree what you're suggesting occurs. I think our concern would be just putting all the $300 million in one organization to then make grants across a wide range of activities.
Representative Solberg?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Randall, as you did the study of these granting organizations, or the grantee, I guess it would be, for the grantor, did you find then a misuse or an improper use of the funds that they were given?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, we didn't look at that side of it, although our office certainly has in the past and has found misuse of state funds and inadequate oversight by the state agencies. We didn't look at actually how the grantees were using the funds. We were looking at the state processes and the extent to which the agency staff could answer that question. And in fact, the lack of site visits and the lack of review of financial reconciliation caused us some concern, because we felt that the agency staff that was responsible for overseeing these grants wouldn't be able to answer your question.
Well, Mr. Chair, if we create another bureaucracy to kind of do the job that the agencies are supposed to be doing, wouldn't it be better to instruct the agency to do the job that they're supposed to be doing?
Mr. Chairman,
or Mr. Noble,
Representative Solberg, we have instructed them on many occasions to do a better job of accountability and oversight. And we're here with you today because we don't think that message has been heeded. As Ms. Randall said, this evaluation was trying to go to the source of the problem, and we think the source is in state government, that we have not done an adequate job of granting money to nonprofits. We haven't had enough competition. We haven't had enough accountability. We haven't had enough verification. Now, I can tell you on an individual basis about the results of that inadequacy. As I said in my opening remark, we don't audit these grants on a regular basis. There are too many of them. We don't have those kinds of resources. But on occasion, we have done investigations, and I have in front of me investigative reports of some of those grants. And I would commend them to you on these organizations, because you find misuse, sometimes pretty significant misuse, of state money. And so it does occur. There has been misuse. And we think that the answer is that agencies need to give greater heed and provide greater accountability and oversight, And I don't think we're really proposing, as Ms. Randall said, a large bureaucracy in state government, two people, to simply ensure that agencies are using standard contracts in grant agreements and ensuring that the purposes that you put in law are fulfilled. I don't think two people is a big bureaucracy to ensure that $300 million is used appropriately.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up. One of the criticism that the old LCMR had from the people who received the grants from them was the absolute horrendous amount of paperwork that they were responsible for reporting back to the LCMR. And we found, you know, just some organizations that I'm not going to go through all that paperwork to do a job that I want to be able to do. And sometimes when we have a problem in a particular grant recipient that has some misuse of funds, and be it egregious, we make sure that we come down on the hammer real hard on everybody that is doing an honest job on it as well. So one of the big complaints of the old LCMR, which is a mostly granting agency, was the tremendous amount of review paperwork that was required. And as a result, sometimes you get organizations that I can't afford that. And we don't get then the competition that we need. So there has to be some kind of a balance, I think, as well. I would be interested to know that, and we hear the egregious ones, and there's probably one in the paper again today as well, of misuse of or inappropriate use of some state funds. But we got to be careful that we don't then cause everybody in the hundreds of organizations that are doing the honest job and doing it in an honest fashion, all kinds of problems as well, and lose that expertise because of some of the requirements we put in.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Solberg, members, we would agree completely that there's a balance to be struck here. We're simply pointing out that we think now there is not adequate accountability. Obviously, you have to be concerned about the amount of paperwork you impose on people. But I think if you talk to a wide range of nonprofit organizations, what they will tell you is that dealing with the state of Minnesota is very difficult and complicated because there is no uniform set of standards. And when they go to the Department of Health, they have one set of standards, or maybe a division within the Department of Natural Resources, they have a different one than the other division in that same department had. So what we're suggesting is that it will create efficiency on the part of not only the state of Minnesota, but the nonprofits that deal with the state of Minnesota, if we get our house in order and have a standard uniform contract and requirements for nonprofits that do business with us.
Mr. Chair, just one more quick point, if I may. In one of your slides, you talked about the contracts for professional and technical contracts, and throughout your presentation, you said it would be good to have competition for those. Did you find in those, since those are usually awarded on a non-competitive basis, that we're getting the best buy for those professional and technical contracts?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we did not look at professional technical contracts. We just looked at the systems that were in place to oversee PT contracts and noted that there's much tighter oversight and more consistent oversight of those than there is of grants.
Thank you.
And, Mr. Chairman, again, I guess I'm the amplifier here, so I always want to amplify a little bit what is said. We actually, Mr. Chairman, Representative Solberg, members, did an evaluation several years ago of professional technical contracts. We found that most are competitively bid. There are some sole source contract arrangements, and we were critical of some of those. Sometimes there's reasonable justification for a sole source, but we think, as we've said a number of times, competition is good. I think that's what really helps the private sector sometimes be more efficient than we are in government. And so let's use that. Let's use that mechanism of competition, both in PP contracting and in grant making. So we would be advocates for competition in both areas of state government.
Do either of you happen to know if there are any good models out there? What comes to mind, and they wouldn't have been a part of your audit, but Metropolitan Council gives out a lot of grants to both private agencies and other local units of government.
do you have any information or knowledge on how they handle some of the issues that we're talking about here for state agencies?
Mr. Chair, members, we didn't look at how Met Council does. We did look at how McKnight Foundation and Bush Foundation let out their grants and their oversight, and they spend a lot more time than state agencies do in the front end of really vetting to make sure that grantees are worthy of the grant award. And they do lots of review of grantees' financial controls and where else they get funding from, and, you know, are they leveraging resources appropriately. And so we think that's some good ideas, and we wrote those into some of the best practices in terms of really making sure that we're granting the funds to solid organizations. So then up front, you've done some legwork to make sure that they're good organizations.
Okay, thank you. Representative Earhart is here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is that $300 million evidently is a yearly figure, and so we're talking $600 in a biennium. Is that down from before the $4.5 billion cuts? Is that, so are we talking nearly $1 billion that we would be handling here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, members, the $300 million that we talk about is a one-year amount of funds awarded through very traditional grants, where, you know, there's a contract, hopefully, and there's a state agency that's responsible. So $300 million a year, $600 million a biennium. The $4.7 billion is all money given to any nonprofit organization. And so that's a different cut. And that includes money that goes to hospitals and health insurance plans. So we took out a lot of those institutional organizations to get down to our $300 million through traditional grants.
Well, Mr. Chairman, what I meant was this area cut when the budget was balanced and we were cutting everything, or are we talking a lot more money, I guess?
Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, we actually don't have historical numbers on this
part,
and that raises up another point that I didn't talk about really in the presentation, but the state does not have a system where it knows how many grants it gives out, how many grantees there are. So there's none of that historical information available.
Mr. Chairman, is this on tape and going out to the public?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Always.
One more question, Mr. Chairman. Can you give me an example of a couple legislative mandated grants?
Certainly. I'm just going to get it out. There's a list in the appendix of the report of the 50 grants that we reviewed. And so of those that we reviewed, the Hunger Solutions, Let's Go Fishing of Minnesota, Living at Home Block Nurse, Minnesota Center for Rural Policy, Serve Minnesota, Twin Cities Rise, Women Venture, were all specifically named in law. And then Brain Injury Association and Minnesota Organization on Fetal Alcohol Syndrome, Parents and Community Action, were described in such a way that very few organizations, if only those, qualified.
Thank you.
Okay, I represent Flowski.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Nobles, could you explain the role of the state auditor in the oversight of these funds, and then depending on your answer, I perhaps have another question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Plowski, the state auditor would have jurisdiction over a local unit of government, and if they made a grant to an organization, they would be responsible for any audit work or investigative work of those monies. So the basic division of jurisdiction for audit responsibility is that the state auditor audits local units of government, the legislative auditor audits state government, although our jurisdiction at the Office of the Legislative Auditor allows us to follow state money anywhere it goes, even into a private organization. That's why we have on occasion investigated and audited private nonprofit organizations that receive state money.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, Mr. Nobles, then why wouldn't we expand the responsibility of the state auditor rather than create another agency or another commission? What would be the problem with simply saying it's the role of the state auditor?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Plowski, to do the work of the Grants Management Office?
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Nobles, whatever agency you wish to create, why couldn't we just use what's in place? rather than create a new one?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Plowski, I think what we're recommending is in place. Currently, for example, at the Department of Administration, there is an Office of Contract Management which has guidelines on grant management. They simply don't enforce them. I'm not sure that we are recommending creating something that is so new as we are recommending that we use what is already there. And I think it would be not a function of the state auditor to be involved in the administration of grants within state government. That's simply not the function of the state auditor's office.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pulaski. Mr. Chair, Mr. Nobles, if we have in place an agency that isn't, or whatever that particular department is, that isn't doing its job, and we have a state auditor, wouldn't it make some sense to expand the responsibility of the state auditor? I don't quite understand why it would be a conflict for them to take a look at how money is being spent anywhere in state government. Why are we just restricting it to local units of government?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's the division of responsibility that has existed for the last 30-some years, that the state auditor does not have audit jurisdiction over state funds or state agencies. That's a function of the Office of the Legislative Auditor and the Legislative Audit Commission. I'm sure that the state auditor can and does do some audit work of funds that, again, come from a local unit of government and go to a nonprofit organization, although there's been at least one occasion where there was local funds, were local funds, together with state funds to a nonprofit. This was the compulsive gambling organization in Duluth. And rather than duplicate the effort by two audit offices, the state auditor asked my office to conduct that audit of both state and local funds. We did and issued a report. So, again, I guess all I can emphasize is that what you're suggesting is not the current division of audit jurisdiction between the state auditor and the legislative auditor.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Nobles, when we eliminated the state treasurer, we took those responsibilities and put them somewhere else. What I'm suggesting is that if we have a part of state government that is dysfunctional, that we make sure some part of state government begins to function that already exists to cover it. You don't need to respond to that. It's just an observation.
Chairman, Mr. Nobles, Representative Plowski, I would just like to emphasize again, though, that the shortest distance to what we are suggesting is, I think, consistent with what you are suggesting, and that would be that the Department of Administration implement the guidelines that it already has. I mean, the commissioner is here. She can represent that department, obviously. That may be their plan. That may be their proposal. I would also emphasize again that what we are suggesting is very similar to what the governor's drive to excellence was proposing, and that is the creation of a small two-person grants management office. They were a little stuck on exactly where it should be in the Department of Finance or in the Department of Administration. I think the governor's budget proposal today will reveal where they came down, but again, I would reserve that to the Commissioner of Administration to announce.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Nobles, you know, your small two-person department or agency, we have an inability to create anything small. And once we create it, it almost expands. Because of the fact that it's there and it needs to expand, I would hope that this time we wouldn't create anything new. We would try to use what's already in place. And if we have a state auditor, if we have the Department of Administration, so here's a question. Mr. Nobles, let's say the Department of Administration isn't following law. What's the punishment under law for a department that isn't following the law?
Well,
it's been a while since I've been on judiciary, so.
Representative Pulaski, there is very little law, unlike with professional technical contracts, on grant making. So, there isn't a lot of law here for a state agency to break. We're not suggesting a lot more law. We're, again, suggesting best management practices. to ensure competition, a standard contract, verification, some additional oversight?
Mr. Chair, I don't know quite what to say other than if we're going to expand state government this session, I think we have a problem.
We have two other people on the list, and then we'll go to the next witness. So I'm going to recognize Representative Anderson and then Leader, and then we'll go to Marsha Abner. So Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Randall, regarding the grants that are on page 45 and 46, is there another organization that was missed on here? Because I, in doing my math, only came up with 49. And along with that, do you have a kind of a spreadsheet of where each of those organizations fell down in regarding the guidelines you were looking at and evaluating each one?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I can double check on the count. There should be all 50 there. I can double check on that for you. And then regarding a spreadsheet on where they fell down, I can get that for you. It's kind of complicated and in access code, but I can work on that for you. Now, I wanted to just emphasize, though, that what we were looking at is how the agencies perform and not really how the grantees perform. So what might be more useful is looking at the breakdown by agency.
Now, Mr. Chair, Mr. Randall, on page 30, you have a kind of a table that shows the comparison of six state agency written grant management policies. Is that kind of the overview of how you evaluate each of the grantees that received a grant through these agencies? Is that kind of your summation of how you have made your final outcome on our basis for your evaluation?
Madam Chair, Representative, the table on page 30 is regarding their written grant management policies, and so for that we were just evaluating on those criteria how the written grant policies fit. When we looked at the grants in general, we were using the criteria on page 23, which are the grant management best practices or the evaluation criteria, and we were looking for things like, you know, open competitive process, a grant contract existing, whether or not site visits occurred, things like that. So we were evaluating the grant oversight based on these best practices.
Representative Anderson, follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Randall and Mr. Nobles, I think I agree with Representative Pawlowski. We do need some kind of punishment or some kind of a retaliatory type of process in which agency or someone who is giving out grants does not follow through in the guidelines that they set up with. Do you have any recommendations? I know you said you don't want any more law, but do you have any recommendations on retaliatory or follow-up on how to deal with agencies who don't even follow their own guidelines?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, well, I think more than a law, what we need is supervision and accountability within the executive branch for individuals who don't do the job that they are required to do. But I would say, and this sort of comes back maybe to what Representative Pawlowski was talking about, and I apologize if I misunderstand what Representative Pawlowski is proposing, because, I mean, one of the actions to get greater accountability and compliance is auditing, but so far as state funds are concerned, that is the responsibility of the legislative auditor, has been, as I said, for a number of decades. And if you want more auditing of these funds, we could do that. I mean, as I said in my opening remarks, we've done that in the past, and we've found problems. And the punishment, if you want to call it that, is that we seek civil restitution in court and criminal action against people who misuse state funds. So that's what we do, and I would suggest that that's the course that folks in the executive branch or the state auditor, where they're auditing under their jurisdiction, where you find that people have misused state money, seek civil recovery of that money and seek criminal prosecutions if laws have been violated.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had the same line of questioning that Representative Plowski did, and he's taken it all apart. But I'd like to also be my opinion that once you have an agency of two people and starting out, I would be concerned that all of a sudden they're the granting agency rather than the oversight committee, and I think that's what usually happens. But I don't have any other comment. Thank you.
Representative Walker, one more quick question.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm interested in getting any of the information that you just said that you would get to Representative Anderson. In addition to that, I'm curious to know, I'm particularly curious about MDH and the fact that they don't have a competitive award process. And I'm going back to page 45 and 46 and looking at the different grantees that receive grants. And I'm curious to know how that breaks down. And so is it the eliminating health disparities that you're referring to? Is it particular grants? Or is it the entire grant itself? The grantees versus the grant, if that makes sense. So, for example, if you listed the eliminating health disparities grants or their awardees, that's a totally different process versus the tobacco. So I'm interested in that information. And then last but not least, the information on are there other agencies that could have applied? For example, are there a multitude amount of organizations that do suicide prevention, as an example? I don't know if that is or not. Or are there just limited individuals, if you decide to set out a grant that's going to particularly focus on African-American communities or another particular community, are there limited individuals, and can you really truly do a competitive grant process if there's only 1 to 5 organizations that do that type of work? And it is, if you took that into account.
Madam Chair, Representative Randall. First of all, I wanted to just say where it says on page 30 that health does not require a competitive award process. That means that they don't have a written grant policy that requires that. It doesn't mean that grants were not awarded through a competitive process. It just means that they weren't required. And when you look at a grant program versus a grantee, it was our experience through the review that all grants under the same grant program were awarded through the same process. So if there was a competitive award process for one of the grantees under the Eliminating Health Disparities grant, then they were all awarded in that fashion. And then in terms of having, can you have a competitive process when there's maybe only 1 to 5 organizations that qualify? We definitely heard that a lot. You know, we know the whole pool that's qualified, and so we just open it up to those 5 organizations. And from our vantage point, we don't think that's adequate, because how do you really know if that's all, you know, the only 5 organizations that qualify, that could qualify for a grant? Even if you are really tapped into a field, nonprofit organizations can start up all the time. And so we would say that there should always be a competitive process, even if you're pretty sure you know the whole universe that is eligible.
Ms. Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand what you're saying there, and I have to slightly disagree, because there are some aspects of being a nonprofit that, yes, nonprofits start up all the time, but that doesn't mean you're a legitimate nonprofit organization that is reputable in a particular community. So that's just slightly unfair of a comment that you're making, because, you know, we can get to organizations, again, that specifically work in the Native community that, you know, yes, you could have gone to a mainstream community, however, and yes, they may have cultural competency, and yes, they could qualify, but they're not necessarily what the community choice would be. And so if you only have 1 African-American chemical dependency place, and yes, you have 10 other organizations, they're not necessarily going to give you the hands-on work or effort as it relates to dealing with a chemical dependency as an African-American. So it's kind of unfair.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just clarify to the question about what we're advocating in terms of competition, I think what it really comes down to is that we're saying, rather than just send a letter to 5 people you know, make a public announcement through the state register or somewhere else, just so there might be some possibility that someone else, some other organization, might be willing to put in a proposal. And if you don't think they're qualified, don't choose them. But we think, rather than being not inclusive by making a public announcement, you should make an announcement and see what proposals you get. It won't tie your hands in terms of your choice of which one you think will serve the community the best.
I think we'll now then go to the next person in, on our list, but I want to thank both Mr. Nobles and Ms. Randall for their testimony here today. And I suspect there may be other divisions and some of the policy committees that will be interested in some of the aspects that were brought out in the report. So we now have Marcia Avner, who is the Public Policy Director of the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, who would like to comment on the report as well. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me this opportunity. I am Marcia Avner, and I am the Public Policy Director at the Council of Nonprofits. We are a statewide organization of nonprofits with over 1,680 member organizations as part of our association. We do support the call for a more transparent, accessible, and accountable system in the state of Minnesota's grant-making process. MCN, the Council of Nonprofits, was among the first to call for reform of the state system. Some of you will remember that in the Ventura administration, there was a freeze imposed on all nonprofit grants and contracts, and no one in the state of Minnesota could tell us what those grants were, who was affected, what the total amount of money expended was, or how we could even notify our own members if they were to be affected. So categorically, we were very concerned about that. During the year 2005, I was able to participate in the Governor's Drive to Excellence Enterprise Grant Systems Task Force. And I know that Commissioner Badgerow is working with the results of that study. We examined not only the good work being done by many grant managers within state agencies, and I do think we need to acknowledge that. We have some truly fine public servants who, in their individual agencies and programs, know this work and do it well. But across the board, we looked at how important it is to strengthen the nonprofit and government partnership through creating a system that is indeed a system in state government. In the Drive to Excellence Task Force, we looked at the confusion, the inconsistency, the occasional conflicts, and even contradictions in the state processes. It was an exhaustive study that DTE did. I think it will inform the legislation that will be forthcoming this session, and we are looking for your support for a systems approach. I would agree with Representative Solberg's point. We need to design this so that it is more fair, open, and accountable, not so that it is more burdensome. And I think that is the intent of the Commissioner and of the work of DTE. The Council of Nonprofits wants to be clear that press coverage of this report to the contrary, I think some of you saw some suggestions on television or the news that we were being given big stacks of cash and squandering it. So in spite of the kind of press coverage that it got, the issue studied was not, as they have indicated, about nonprofit activity, but rather about the state's need to be more consistent, reliable, and transparent. We urge you to remember that the report itself was not critical of any particular nonprofit organizations, and that while there are always going to be instances of mismanagement in any sector, the preponderance of Minnesota's nonprofits are accountable and transparent. We are regulated federally and by the state. We report our activities, unlike anyone else, on the IRS Form 990, which is posted publicly for anyone to view. We do work, as you know, in partnership with the Minnesota's regional, state, and some national foundations and corporations that provide grants to nonprofits. They demand from us very high levels of rigorous application, oversight, and reporting. I think the models that have been cited with the McKnight and Bush foundations are a good starting place, but I think that nonprofits, most of you know, many of you serve on the boards of nonprofits or have been staff to nonprofits, nonprofits have what I would call habits of good behavior created by our relationships with our philanthropic donors and their rigorous expectations of us. If we don't succeed, they don't succeed. I would say the same is true for the state. If we don't succeed in our partnership, then the state doesn't succeed in meeting the intent of the legislation that you pass. And I think that by creating a very small but clear central infrastructure, we will create opportunities for those rural, small, emerging, as well as urban and suburban nonprofits to compete, to know where to go to find out information about grants that are available, to determine whether or not they have an interest, and to receive some support, guidance, perhaps technical assistance in understanding how to apply for state money, what is expected of them in the management of those grants, and an understanding of the rigorous oversight that is and should be part of the grant process. So we look forward to working with the Department of Administration, with this committee and other committees on proposed legislation, hoping for a system that ensures mutual accountability. We hold nonprofits to a high standard. We want them to meet their responsibilities in fulfilling the legislative intent of a grant, and we want to have good partners in state government, making sure that we understand what's expected and that work with us in a true partnership to get the job done. So we really appreciate your very thoughtful exploration of this issue. I know that there will be legislation forthcoming, and we hope to have the opportunity to work to make sure it is a strong, accountable, open system.
Okay, we have Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think mine is more to the committee. When I look at that list of organizations and read the report, there seems to be the suggestion that the legislature ought not to single out a particular group, and it says throughout grants should be awarded through a competitive process, but just pulling one of those out, the Living at Home Block Nurse Program, unless I am mistaken, there really isn't another organization like that. So when the legislature looks at that, clearly they would name that organization. And so I have just seeing that thread through the report, a little confusion about if that's a process we put in place, how in some instances it may not be practical.
Yeah, was that a comment, or did you want to hear?
I don't know that that's directed at any of the people there, but more as we think about our own work, when we specify, I don't know if some of you have looked, what they're seeming to suggest is that the legislature shouldn't designate for a grant, that they should be awarded through a competitive process, but just picking out that one, and I think there are others, whether that really is a practical recommendation for us from our,
maybe,
our own.
If, on that one, if Mr. Nobles could come in. I think he touched a little bit on it earlier about perhaps where you don't necessarily always know who might be out there to compete for a grant, but maybe I could expand on that a bit.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, yes, I think that what we're suggesting as notice, public notice, that you have a particular service that you want provided, that you have money available, would apply to the legislative process as well as the executive process. And I just think the way we've seen some organizations named in law, there wasn't that process. It was left to a relatively small group of legislators who thought they knew whether or not there was a single provider to name that provider. In this case, you may be correct, Representative Hausman, that there is that only that one provider. But we would suggest that you still leave it to the Department of Health. They would know as well as you if they are the only provider. And then they would understand that the onus is on them to have a written contract, to provide oversight and accountability. What we're suggesting to you is what we've heard and learned and found is that when you name the organization, you weaken the agency's incentive to provide any accountability and oversight. So we would strongly recommend that as a general practice, you not do that, because I think it has some weakening of accountability. There may be exceptions, and we certainly think that the process that is followed by the LCCMR is to some degree an exception, because there is a more open competitive process and consideration of a number of candidates for a grant, and there is pretty consistent follow-up and accountability. But in other instances, there hasn't been, and I would cite one specific one where the legislature named an organization in Duluth to receive a grant to provide compulsive gambling services. And that is one of those instances, back to, I think, Representative Pawlowski's concern, who is following up and doing auditing? Well, we did. And we found significant problems. We found that the money that you had appropriated to that specific organization was not spent in a way that was effective. In fact, a lot of the money was spent quite inappropriately. So we can cite a number of examples where we think legislatively naming of a nonprofit to receive an amount of money has led to a weakening of accountability and oversight.
Okay, thank you. Representative Anderson, was your question of Ms. Avner or Mr. Nobles?
Ms. Avner.
Okay, she can come forward.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Avner, you mentioned in this letter that was passed out to us from the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, it says in your last statement, MCN supports the overall goals for reform of the state grants process, including a grants management office and requirements that state agencies follow best practices. Would you agree that a follow-up process of punishment for civil litigation regarding where the misuse of funds has been documented should have civil litigation put in place?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I think that the confusion here is, would this be civil action against the state agency that had failed to do good management of the grants, which is the focus of this study? And I don't know enough about the law to know if the state can sue the state. But the question of whether or not a nonprofit that misuses funds should be handled through the court system, I think, is already something that happens. I don't believe I'm mistaken. I think that is the remedy. And that is part of what we would suggest, is that what we really need to look at in this, with the results of this report and the Drive to Excellence work, is what is the state's role? And how will the state essentially hold itself accountable by looking at standards of practice to which all state agencies are held responsible? And I don't know how the state can sanction its own staff internally. There are already processes in place when there is determined that a nonprofit has mismanaged a grant or contract in any way to remedy that. Those remedies exist and are used.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Avner, you recommend here also an establishment of a grants management office. What do you look for? What is your criteria in looking at this office? If it is established, what are you hoping for through this?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, thank you for that question. We hope that it will do two things. On the one hand, provide a central locus for information and clarity about best practices, and at the same time allow some of the specific details of specific programs to be done through the existing agencies and grant managers. What we hope from a central office is that it will, number one, use the technologies available to us to post in a single place information about all grants that are available that for which proposals are being sought from the state of Minnesota. That does not currently exist. It's quite serendipitous. Some agencies have good postings about the grants that they have available. Some do not. We would like very much to see very standard practices of the amount of time that an organization has to present its proposal. We would like to know, as potential grantees, what is expected of us, and we would hope that there would be technical assistance for nonprofits to say, this is the kind of bookkeeping we require, this is the kind of reporting that we require. So that a central office would set forth those pieces of information and those expectations in a very clear way. In most cases, nonprofits do not know what the decision-making process is within a state agency by which a determination is made in a competitive grants process about who is to receive the grant. And in fact, we know anecdotally of instances where organizations have been ranked on the merits of their performance, their capacity, their past accomplishments, and not received the grant for inexplicable reasons. And so we think that a central, small, lean, dare I say, mean in the best sense of the word, function, will provide that central locus, use the technology to advantage so that we all know what's available, what the process is, what the results are, and what the standardized forms are. In the philanthropic community, there is a common grant application form. And that would be helpful as long as it's not too rigid. But a common grant application that would still allow agencies to ask for additional information would be great streamlining. The Drive to Excellence was designed to realize efficiency and effectiveness in government. We now have nonprofit organizations that are high performers that do three grants for the same purpose and have three totally different reporting forms. We could make life much more rational if we were to say there's a standard report that's expected. And that's what we would hope a small but clearly focused grants management office could accomplish. Long answer, but I have a lot of thoughts about how we could make the system better with little effort and a good focus.
Our final question will be Representative Clark, because we do have one more item on the agenda, and I want to give the fiscal analysts a chance to give an overview of their accounts. So, Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Abner, I want to know what you would think of this scenario. It's actually a real one. There was an organization that did some, it's one of the ones listed here, who did some work with childhood health issues. It went from being designated as a grantee to a competitive process in the previous session, I believe, or maybe two sessions ago. And then what happened is the time that we designated that money to go to be effectively provided for that nonprofit was 7 months late. That agency, that little nonprofit, had to lay off a lot of their staff. Eventually, they were awarded the grant because they were the best, really, and one of the few, kind of similar to what Representative Hausman was saying, one of the few that were really capable of doing the work. So I'm wondering what you think of that scenario. I mean, I don't know that it's going to be a 100% or even 50% positive thing in every case, because this situation, we did just what this audit report would have suggested. It went to a competitive situation and then did this big failure, I would say, by the state agency.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I'll try to keep my answer brief. This is an area where I think the transition has to be structured very carefully, because we found, especially in years when the legislature went into special session to set budgets, that a number of organizations, whether they were designated in the legislation or had been awarded a grant in a competitive process, didn't get payment because there was a delay in the grant process. And we had the each year write retroactivity into the bills. So one of the things that we hold as a high standard that we think the Grants Management Office would have to consider is continuity of service and care. And that's not only important to the health of a nonprofit, which needs to have some stability and sustainability in its work. It's most important to the people we serve. They need to know that there won't be interruptions of service and program. So in the few cases where there will be a transition from a designated grant to a competitive system, I think there will have to be some design work to make sure that that doesn't disrupt the flow of service. And I'm hoping that when we look at specific legislation, we will look at the issue, and one of these is raised as a best practice that we do have some questions about, that most payments should be made on a reimbursement basis. That doesn't always fit the bill. We don't want organizations to have to lay off staff or curtail services because payments are delayed for services that need to be ongoing, whether that is a hotline or a Meals on Wheels or a direct service. We want the people of Minnesota in our partnership with government to get consistent, high-quality services. And so I think those transitions will need to be designed carefully.
Jim?
Okay, thank you. We will... And thank you, Ms. Abner. Again, thank you to Mr. Nobles and Ms. Randall. We'll now go to item number 5 on the agenda, the presentations by House Fiscal Staff about division accounts and funding base. And we've got about 10 or 12 minutes remaining, so Mr. Marks, so we'll get as far as we can and then roll it over. But we do need to adjourn at 11:30 because there are a lot of things happening today, with the budget coming out and what have you a little bit later.
Chair, I have a question about the whole flow of things here.
in this committee to other committees, maybe this, could I ask it if be appropriate now before we get into this?
As we're getting set up.
Because, Mr. Chair, I noticed, you know, there's a number of bills that have been referred to Representative Murphy's committee from here that deal with Representative Slawick's committee, my committee, and Representative Grinning's committee, who isn't here. But then, and there, I looked at the bills that were in Representative Murphy's committee today in your chart, but yet I got one of the bills the other day and we voted on it and we moved it up. And we amended the bill, actually, even. It was Representative Houston's bill, so I'd like to know how I got that bill if it never came out of Representative Murphy's committee. And
a policy bill?
Well, yes, Mr. Chair.
It's in your memo, Mr. Chair.
But it's in your memo that it's still in her committee. So, you know, I just want to know, with all the different steps we have here, how we're going to keep track of things. And you did?
I did.
So, Mr. Chair,
when I got the memo from you, I made a decision and sent it on to Representative Rupkin and Representative Pollock, Representative Bradley.
So, Mr. Chair, then, so...
So you're not directly a division of... It's indirect. So what happens is that a bill is introduced to finance, and I refer it, if it covers any one of those three divisions, to Representative Murphy's committee or division, and then she, in turn, determines which of the three divisions will be taking up that bill. And apparently that's what you did then, Representative Murphy.
Yes. So, Mr. Chair, if Representative Murphy determines that it's just the policy bill, which although there were tax implications and other financial implications in this bill, then she can automatically refer it down. But if it's a finance bill to those three divisions, then we have to have an official meeting of her subcommittee or division of your division.
It goes out the same way it goes in.
It usually does, Mr. Chair. That's a whole different issue. So I'm still not tracking this then, because
we can perhaps talk about that a little bit further. I do want to, with the 10 minutes that remains, but essentially the reason that I asked you if it was a policy bill, policy bills are referred directly by the speaker. And if it's a finance bill, then it would be referred to the finance committee and then re-referred to one of the divisions.
Well,
and when I wasn't making light when I said it out the same way it comes in. So if it comes in as a pure policy bill and went directly to one of the divisions that deals with policy issues as well as finance, then it would go out the same way it came in. But if it has come into the finance committee and is re-referred and is a finance bill, then it goes out to the finance committee as well.
But,
and then would be re-referred if it had tax implications to the tax committee or directly to the Ways and Means Committee if it didn't have tax implications.
But, Mr. Chair, it was determined that it was a policy bill by evidently you and Representative Murphy, but it didn't get referred that way on the floor. It got referred to you, then you referred it to Representative Murphy, and today...
Let's take a look at that bill, but you did indicate that it did have some potential tax ramifications.
I'd like it back anyway now, because I want to look at it again, because there are other political...
Well, it hasn't come up to this committee yet, so why don't you have that conversation with Representative Murphy then? But if it did have tax implications, then it would have had a finance jurisdiction, so that's the way it went in, and that's the way it would come out. Go ahead, introduce yourself, and we will get started with the few minutes that remain.
Sure. Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Emily Adrians, and I'm one of the new fiscal analysts. The committees that I'm staffing are Representative Slavik's committee, which is the Early Childhood Finance Committee, which is what I'll talk about today. And in the interest of time, I'll try to be as brief as possible without going too quickly. You should all have packets of what I'm going to go over, so you can't see it very well on the screen. first of all, the first chart that's on page 2, what it shows is it's the allocation of the general fund resources for the fiscal years 2008 and 9. And I just want to show this to give a sense of what portion the Early Childhood Finance Committee makes up. You can see it's 1.3% of the total resources for fiscal year 2008 and 9. And the next page, page 3, lays out the actual dollar figures. So of the $32 billion for the biennium, the committee is appropriated about $420 million. And then page 4 shows for the committee specifically how that $420 million is broken out. What the committee, it has two agencies that are represented, the Department of Human Services as well as the Department of Education. And for DHS, the programs that it has MSIP child care, it also has basic sliding fee child care programs, and the child care development grants. And you can, all of that is sort of combined in that child care grants portion of the pie, about 55%. And then for the Department of Education, there's early childhood and family support, which that has the Head Start programs and school readiness programs. And that makes up about 24% of the portion. And then there's also community ed, education and prevention, and then self-sufficiency and lifelong learning. And moving along to page 5. Those, again, are the numbers, so you can see the actual breakdown of the $420 million for the biennium. And this compares, I didn't give you a sheet on the total spending, but just to give you an idea, once you add in federal funding like TANF funds and other fees and everything, for the biennium, the total that is spent, it gets close to almost $650 million. So 420 of that comes from the state. And that kind of gets into the next page. What this shows, this is just the education portion. And this is the forecasted amount for fiscal year 2008. And the total revenue that this portion of the committee will have, it's about $165 million. That's the forecast. And I haven't included fee revenue.